Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for December 8th, 2008, and on this episode, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews Marianne Thebus and Leah Mortensen. She'll be talking to them about their play, Well. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago. And let's talk theater.
This is Ann Nicholson Weber, and you're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. This week, my guests are Marianne Thebus and Leah Mortensen, who are both starring in a production of Lisa Krohn's play, Well, which is at Next Theater in Evanston. So welcome, Marianne. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Maybe we could start, Leah, if you could just quickly kind of describe what the play is.
I will do my best quickly. So the play is written by a performance artist by the name of Lisa Krohn, and it's a play that includes her mother on stage, and I would say that the main theme is, there are a lot of them, but there's the mother-daughter relationship, there's the mother who has been sick for all of her life, and the daughter who was sick, the daughter got better, and so it's that whole pull of why can't my mother get better too? Does she want to? And then it gets more complicated because, as those of us who are mothers and daughters understand, that relationship can morph and twist things into shapes that aren't necessarily reality. I don't want to give away too much about the device of the play, but there's a lot of breaking the fourth wall, speaking directly to the audience, especially in Lisa Krohn's case. And there are also times where the actors fall back into themselves on stage. They lose their characters. Do you want to add anything?
I would say the same thing. I think that there is the emphasis on the illness, wellness issues, which are of interest to everybody, you know. But also the issue, the theme of mother-daughter is very strong in it. And essentially in its own way, and I don't think this is giving it away, but sort of takes over. It's there anyway, and then it just kind of evolves because there's something very spontaneous about the play, the way it's written and the way we flesh it out ourselves, so that it's sort of unexpected things that happen.
Right.
And which I think is one of the nicer things about the play, actually. It's fun to do.
And it's funny as well.
Yeah, it's funny.
Throughout.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
It's funny. And it's very satisfying, I think, in many ways. You've seen it, so, you know, and you liked it. So I think.
Right. Oh, yeah. I loved it. I loved it. Well, I think, you know, it has almost, I thought as you were talking, although I hadn't thought this before the interview, I connected it to Charlie Kaufman's work, where you're seeing the process of making the piece is part of what the
Absolutely.
Piece is about.
Mm-hmm.
And I can sometimes find that a bit tiresome, but in this case, I think it succeeds beautifully. So Leah, you're actually playing Lisa Krohn, the author, who performed this originally. So you're in a funny place, it seems to me. You're an actor playing a real person who played herself in the original version of this. How did that affect what you set out to do? Did you struggle with that? Did you think about it?
In a word, yes. I struggled greatly, and Marianne can attest to that. You know, I started at the beginning thinking, first of all, I wouldn't say that this play is written so much as it has just been recorded down the experience of what they created. Because a lot of the process of Well coming to be was a real workshop-oriented thing. So by that, what I mean by that is that unlike Shakespeare or Tennessee Williams, where the character is within the text, Lisa didn't have to worry about that because this was her life, her story. She already had that embedded within her person. So my struggle was to find that history, which isn't necessarily in the words. I don't mean But the story isn't in the words. But who Lisa Crone isn't necessarily in the language. So I first, as an actor, started to try to do what I always do, which is find the rhythms and what do those rhythms then mean that that kind of person is. And that wasn't working. So I threw that away. And then I thought, well, then I'm gonna work on this idea of the stand-up comedian performance artist, you know, scenario of this person. And that got me a little bit closer, but then I was losing the heart of her because I was performing again. And it really wasn't until, and I suppose Marianne can agree with this as well, we really could not figure out this play until we had people in the seats. Because even with a director, an assistant director, and a stage manager who'd seen it over and over and over again, it's not the same as a body of people who become another character in the play.
Because you have dialogues with us.
That's exactly right. I can't talk at you. I really, really have to honestly, genuinely talk to you.
She also has secret dialogue right. with them. You know, I mean, there's a great levels. Parts of it all through the play that I, as her mother, who are on the side of the stage, not on the stage, because it's a play within a play, I presumably don't know what's going on. So it's really taken the audience into her confidence, which isn't just explaining to them or sharing with them, but actually they kind of bring them into your space and telling them things that no one else knows.
Well, she kind of goes behind your back, so to speak.
Yeah, well,
right.
So
yeah, that's right. And just to put a little button on it, it's probably the scariest thing I've ever done because the mask of actor even needs to be taken off. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Well, because also you're playing Lisa Crone, but not her as herself. You're playing her performing as herself. So there are all these layers.
Yes.
I mean, her persona, her performance persona is who you are. Anyway, I can imagine that was rather challenging. Well, when you have a play of a style like this for you, Marianne, you actually do also end up, do you ever address the audience? Yeah,
you do.
Yeah,
I have a long monologue.
Right.
When she goes upstairs.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
That's when I leave her stranded.
Leaves me stranded on the stage.
Poor Lisa's mother sits there dying because she now has to be a hostess to
that's
this audience.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, and so for you, I mean, you're a very experienced actor. You've probably done everything. I imagine you've done that kind of work before.
Well, it's a bit different, although I have performed in plays that the fourth wall is broken, and I speak directly to the audience. One was Ella Mocenary years ago by Lee Blessing at Victory Gardens. One was Sister Mary Ignatius, Explains It All for You, which was the old Wisdom Bridge. And so I have had that experience, and it's hard to get used to at first, I find, even now. But once you go along, it becomes kind of fun, you know, and I quite like it. The thing I don't like, and this is a personal thing, I don't like to be able to see who's in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lisa has to deal with that. Leah, I mean, her stage name is Lisa. she has to deal with that all the time. But I, fortunately, when I had this monologue towards the end, I don't. The theater is black, and I don't actually see the faces because I find that disconcerting because it's not people's faces. It's people I know.
Right.
And there they are sitting there, and I'm the character. And it gets in a very strange space.
Yeah.
So I don't like that. But
it does. And I have to say I'm uncomfortable with it too, but I have to get past it because I see them all the time. So, there are little tricks that I've come up with. I can tell immediately when somebody's uncomfortable if I look right at them. So I choose to find somebody else.
Yeah.
There's always a few people who are fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones who will be supportive and they'll smile at you. And you have to be judicious.
It's a unique experience. I don't think there's any actor that wouldn't agree with that, except maybe the real Lisa Crone.
Right.
As a solo performer, and then they feed on that, I'm sure, in a unique way that I personally really don't know.
Which I'm starting to, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to understand what that means.
Yeah.
You could have another career in stand-up after this.
I think not.
Well, you were talking about how direct your relationship is with the audience and how it becomes almost a dialogue. Have you ever had an audience who simply wouldn't do their part?
We had a very peculiar performance last Sunday afternoon, and we're now 2 weeks
2+ weeks in. No, longer, three weeks. Yeah. And had not had this happen at all. And I could tell from the moment I walked on stage and opened my mouth, I come out and I directly say hello to the audience and thank them for coming and start to explain what we're going to be doing. And I could tell immediately that they were, I don't know, uncomfortable or hesitant or, mm-hmm. and I don't think we ever really got them. Now, that's not to say that they didn't listen. And there were a few people in the way back that responded the way we're used to responding. But as a whole, would you agree, Mary?
Yeah, it was true. We all came off and like, gosh, we sure didn't get them. But, you know, it's such a funny thing. You, though, since you look at them, you would be better able to judge that. But, you know, people don't always – aren't always auditory in their right. responses. I mean, you can't – I, for one – if I'm in an audience and I laugh, I go like that. I never laugh
guffaws.
Out loud.
Right.
You see what I mean? No one hears that
right.
little squeak.
Right.
And so we don't really know, but they didn't give back a whole lot.
On average.
And it felt like, on average, you're right. And it felt to all of us like, but who knows?
It's
you
a
know,
fascinating thing.
It could
thing
have been an older house too.
And then we've also, though, had some old house. I mean, generally speaking, it's an older audience up here, but we've had some houses where they absolutely go along with the gallows humor about mm-hmm. illness because they're in it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're
right.
living
yeah, yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And they eat it mm-hmm. up. So who's to say?
It's hard to tell, but we did have that.
We did have one.
Since you asked, we did. We were like, oh, gosh. I don't know.
Do you find yourself straining to do something to make it happen?
Well, this is the difficult thing, and especially in my situation, because I got enough jokes that I have to tell and sell. And if they don't seem to be landing, the actor instinct is – I got to do something.
Let's push it on. Yeah, let's get it over with.
So usually what happens, and I think this did happen on Sunday, we cut, which is a lot of time, an entire minute off.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously sped up.
Which is usually a good thing, but then
right.
we were like, well,
that's
maybe
when you're desperate.
For the wrong reason.
right. And of course, then when you sometimes when you try harder, then you're losing the real personality
well, yeah,
of the piece.
Because then it
right?
becomes like, something you're trying to accomplish as opposed to something you're just living.
That's right.
And we none of us like that, even though we can fall into that trap now
yeah.
and then. We don't, as actors, we don't really want that. It's a process. It's a live process. That's what makes live theater different from any other, you know, performance form, is
right.
that it's a living thing and it has its own life each time, and it should.
So that's a real risk of this form. That
it really is.
Yeah. It is. It is.
Uh-huh. Well, the other important thing about the play, there's the mother-daughter relationship, which I think probably even more than it starts out. She starts out to write a play about illness and ends up willy-nilly writing a play about mother-daughters.
Mm-hmm.
But the illness issue is very interesting, and some of her thinking about it is very
mm-hmm.
interesting. Did, you know, was that important to you? Were there things you kind of learned or ways you thought about the theme in new ways because of this play?
Well, I certainly, yeah, we did. There was quite a bit of research done on that by the dramaturg as we were in early rehearsals on allergies and different kind of illnesses and psychosomatic illnesses and so forth and so on.
And I think also the psychological piece of how who decides who is ill. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can say that you get cancer, okay, therefore you are sick. But there are some people who even will say that people get cancer because they are sick spiritually, or you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the piece that I think is really
mm-hmm.
fascinating. And I think that Lisa was trying to get at with, you know, why can't her mother get well? It's such a simple question, but such a complex one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then she weaves in another very important theme, which is the, there's a kind of sub-story about the integration or the protecting
sure.
of
yes.
an integrated neighborhood in Michigan town.
Absolutely.
And all of that feeds together, which is why I admire the play so much, because all of the strands resonate with each other.
Uh-huh.
I have to say that I had trouble at the beginning seeing the connection as actor in the middle of it. I had
mm-hmm.
real difficulty weaving those
mm-hmm.
two things together. I didn't quite
yeah
understand it. I do now, and I think if I were watching, I would too. But somehow being in the middle of it, it was hard for me.
I could imagine. Yeah. I found what I had to do for myself, I did it fairly early, actually, was to try to figure out why this woman who's been ill for so long and is now still weak and so forth, what was it about the situation that her daughter was presenting, this play, within a play, as it were, and talking to the audience and all that? What was it that compelled me to be involved in that? Why didn't I just sit back and watch and be ill? And why was that? And I decided for myself, and you remember my saying this, I think, at one of our rehearsals, that her providing that situation, those memories of the neighborhood, and it sort of drew me back, because I say later in the play that I haven't done anything for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so it allowed me to kind of re-experience that exciting, vital time of my life, and that is what causes me to start participating, in fact, interfering very often.
Right.
But because I thought, well, why would I be doing that? I say more than once, I don't like being on stage, and you're not writing a play about me, are you, and all that. I don't like it. You know, I've been insecure all of my life, and all kinds of things that would think would prevent me from being drawn in, and yet I'm extremely drawn in by it, and more than actually I think my daughter intended initially.
Right, right.
So anyway, I think that's an interesting aspect of it for me personally as the actor doing the character.
Yeah. Well, why don't you talk a little bit about the other characters in the play? There are three other actors, is it? Four other actors. So talk a little bit about their involvement in the story.
The actors in the play start off on my side. Mm-hmm. And as time goes on, they end up on Mom's side. I mean, that's important, because they become
tools, actually.
Yes, for both of us in a way.
We're both trying to...
And when they leave,
yeah,
it's just us again. And that's when the real S hits the fan.
Yeah. I think the issue of competition is not extreme in this, but they are definitely, they're hired by you, and they're actors in the play that you wrote, the character wrote, Leah's character wrote. And somehow things start breaking down, and they end up kind of on... with me, you know, and more sympathetic, and that's a funny aspect of the play. It's kind of interesting, but
well, particularly when you consider that every person in this play is in some way a projection of Lisa Crone, because she wrote it. So for her to write a play,
well, that was one big thing you should address. I mean, we all had to deal with that, but the whole issue of how far you go down the road of the real Lisa Crone and how you don't. That's really your challenge more than mine. I mean,
especially again, without not trying to give away anything, but I'm the only person who doesn't break production.
When Lisa played, what you mean by break.
I don't get to break character and become Leah Mortensen, the actress. And in the production, when Lisa was actually playing herself, it made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's moved on, and other actors actresses are portraying her, and it's technically a difficult thing
that's hard. I think.
Did you go back and look at videos of her performing, for instance?
I will admit that when I was in my own neuroses about like 2.5 weeks in, I Googled, and believe it or not, there's no video of her. I found exactly one thing, and she was at a some sort of an awards ceremony. And I'm glad in a way that I didn't find stuff of her, because I think that was going down the wrong road. That was me grasping at straws, trying to figure out if I can see Lisa, I can understand a little bit more how she says these words.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was an experience that's never happened to me, not being able to get those words in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And finally it happened because I said, well, forget it. I can only be Leah in this. And that's where
mm-hmm. where the piece,
you know,
piece
I mean, Lisa's mother is living too.
A real person, right? Yeah.
My character is a living person and has. We read an interview between Lisa Krohn and her mother, and there was a lot of these issues that are dealt with in this play, in this piece, that are still alive and well today, and they're still dealing with them, which is kind of interesting. Even though clearly Lisa Krohn wrote this piece to deal with those issues.
Right.
And she still is, whether or not she had a play that was successful or not.
What does the mother say in that interview, that she just might write her
own play? At the end of the interview, apparently, she says, wait till I write my play.
Right.
Great. There's one more thing that I think is important to say, that Lisa Krohn is such a self-effacing performer and writer. I mean, she intentionally has written a play that falls apart and pits her as the person who's responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes great, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. great courage and humility that she mm-hmm. intentionally puts herself in the failing, mm-hmm. flailing
right.
place.
Makes herself look bad.
Yeah.
Well, and that, I think, is part of what appeals to me so much about the play, is it really is honest. It just keeps trying harder and harder and harder mm-hmm. to get to and second guessing herself and saying, well, that's not completely true. And
that's right.
Digging deeper. And that, I think, may be the source of why for me it was so moving, mm-hmm. because
it you made me think of another thing, which I love, that the mother's Anne says to Lisa, you were always so different and so unique, and I love that about you. And mm-hmm. Lisa goes through this struggle in the play and her looking back at her childhood of, I don't want to be different. And then she grows up different, and
in light of that too, there are lots of children in the world, in fact my own,
mine too,
that are offspring of unusual, not run-of-the-mill, and I don't mean better, but mm-hmm. I mean just not ordinary, you know,
right.
or like most of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard on those kids.
Sure.
I mean, there's a piece where I say in that little bit there, did you tell them how unusual you were? Well, what in the world? Of course not. And yet to the mother, it was terrific that she was unusual
and
kept giving that message. So when you're grown, it's fine. You can find your own way. But as a kid, that's tough, you know.
What is the line something like, I'm stuck? What is it she says?
Yeah, she
repeats
says,
something.
I'm stuck. Well, she talks about, you know, in response to what Marianne was just saying about the mother encouraging this uniqueness, mm-hmm. She does say, I wish that I could be an adult. Because as a kid, she really does say that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's hard to be a kid. And as an adult, I can do what I want. I can leave. And then she says, but I'm stuck.
Well, and that does in a way sum up. I mean, this is a play about an artist making her art on the stage in front of us and all of the mess that is and all that's good and bad about being artistic. I mean, that's not an overt
messy
theme of the play, but I think mm-hmm. in some ways.
But it does tie in integration, right,
mm-hmm.
which is messy.
Right.
You know, that message that mm-hmm. is given at the end, which is overall what is really healthy includes mm-hmm. all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's complicated. Mm-hmm. You can't separate it
and
out.
She resists any impulse to tidy it up. Or she fights it. She fights that issue.
Right.
What were you going to say?
I thought it was interesting, too, that it just so happened that, you know, this campaign we have all just been through and so much of the message of Obama, not just what he had to say, but the fact that he himself was running for office and then won. I mean, it's all mixed in there, even though in this play it's more about the 50s, 60s, 70s. It still resonates in a very specific way, and that was very exciting.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
That's very wonderful to
that's right.
have that, living that at these hot times.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, I hope people will come and see what I think is a really wonderful play and beautifully performed by these two actors and the rest
Thank
of
you.
The company.
Thank you so much.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of December 8th, 2008. Rob Roy the Musical, a new musical based on the legendary Scottish hero, will receive its world premiere here in Chicago on February 3rd. Set in Scotland and England during the first half of the 18th century, Rob Roy the Musical tells the tale of the famous Highlander from his days as a peaceful clan leader and through his difficulties with the evil Duke of Montrose. A workshop of the musical played at the 2006 Edinburgh Fringe Festival as a one-act piece and received rave reviews. This production stars George Moswell as Rob Roy, Susan Gilmore as his wife Mary, and David Dunbar as the Duke of Montrose. Rob Roy the Musical is being presented at the Ari Crown Theater here in Chicago. Tickets are currently available. To find out how to get the tickets, click on over to our website. The Goodman Theater rings in the new year with an 8-play landmark theatrical event called A Global Exploration, Eugene O'Neill in the 21st Century. Featuring over 100 artists from 6 theater companies around the world, they will bring their interpretation of the father of the American drama, as seen through the 21st century international lens. Participating companies come from New York, Brazil, and Amsterdam, and from here in Chicago as well. That includes the Hypocrites and the Neo-Futurists. The centerpiece of the event is artistic director Robert Falls' new interpretation of Desire Under the Elms, featuring Brian Dennehy. A Global Exploration, Eugene O'Neill in the 21st Century, runs from January 7th through March 8th. For tickets and information, visit goodmantheater.org, or for more details about all of the shows in the event, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Steppenwolf Theater Company and artistic director Martha Levy have announced their newest ensemble member. Congratulations goes to William Peterson. That now makes a total of 42 members in the Steppenwolf Ensemble, which is the longest existing theater ensemble in the United States. William Peterson founded the Remains Theater Ensemble back in 1979 with a group of fellow actors, including current Steppenwolf Ensemble members Gary Cole and Amy Morton. He serves as the executive producer of TV's CSI and starred in The Young Guns along with many other hit films. He currently appears in Steppenwolf's Dublin Carol. Check out our news page for a full list of Steppenwolf's current ensemble members. Congratulations again, William Peterson. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank our guests for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.